I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. This is Thursday. Next hour, we will have our Freedom and Prosperity Hour. Cade Yates with Americans for Prosperity will come in. I haven't seen Cade in a while, so I'll be happy to have him in to join me. They'll talk about what their organization is up to, and I've got some news stories to discuss with him right up their alley for, you know, economic freedom. This is extremely important. I'm going to kind of... It's not any mystery. I touch a lot on economic topics here on the show. Today will certainly be no different. So anyway, next hour, Cade Yates. To get us kicked off, I guess we'll go ahead and get into this. Quotes of the day today. This was J.R.R. Tolkien. And I gave my son four names. It was just a lot I wanted to cram in there, some honorariums I named him Michael after myself, and then we threw a name in from my great-grandfather, and we threw another name in to honor another family that was very close to us, and then the last name. It's not an easy thing to bear when you give somebody four names. He's gone down to three. But anyway, J.R.R. Tolkien said, "My political opinions lean more and more towards anarchy. The most improper job of any man, even saints, is bossing other men. Not one in a million is fit for it, and least of all those who seek the opportunity." That's something worth thinking about. Certainly what I believe. I don't care how many of you guys get together and vote for somebody. They don't get to boss me around. That's kind of what I think. And the people that are asking for power are the least deserving of it. James Madison said the purpose of the Constitution is to restrict the majority's ability to harm a minority. That is the purpose of the Constitution, to restrict the majority's ability to harm a minority. And I am that minority, and I'll tell you what. People keep getting together, and by 51%+ or 50.2%, they decide to elect one person or another that then presumes to be the boss of me. I ain't having it. I'm not having it. I don't care how many of you get together and who you vote for. I don't recognize your chosen person's authority over me. Today is the 14th anniversary of the Lehman Moment. Do you know what that is? Today's the 14th anniversary of the day that Lehman Brothers, I was looking up the history of them before I came on. Lehman Brothers was started in 1844. 1844 was a small grocery store, I believe, in Alabama. It grew to be one of the largest investment banks in the world. I believe it was the fourth largest investment bank in the world with a 160-year history. And on this day, back in 2008, it declared bankruptcy. It was the kind of that grain of sand that led to the financial crisis. I believe we're on the cusp of one. We'll see who this time's Lehman Brothers is. Let's see if I've got this story. I didn't pull it up. We're going to talk a little bit about the economy, about investing, and I've got one of my regular segments coming up from CNS News. But it's funny, Jim Cramer, one of the financial guys. He's the stock picker on CNBC. Mad Money with Jim Cramer. And it's kind of interesting in knowing that Jim Cramer has got 2 million followers. 2 million followers, and especially ever since he came out and said he believed that the military should be rolled out on the American people, and if necessary, we should be pinned to the ground and have a shot jammed into our arm. This is Jim Cramer, a horrific stock picker. And it's kind of like politics. You know, there's so many people out there who still, they pay attention to nothing. They don't care about results. They're always propagandized to believe that they just have to vote for an R or a D. And so they vote for this corrupt class. And you think, I mean, I've asked this question, and it's not, you know, I don't really want to single him out. But when I saw that something like 160,000 people had gotten off the couch and gone to vote in a primary that Roger Wicker ran in against somebody who didn't have a chance in hell of beating him. And this was, you know, it wasn't a day where other things were being voted on. I thought to myself, what 160,000 people in the state of Mississippi are so energized for Roger Wicker that they would bother to leave their house or leave work or take their lunch break to go just cast a ballot in a meaningless primary for this guy? And we have to understand there's so many people out there that just don't, is this really insulting? Because some of you might have done that. I don't get it. I'm not sure exactly what your allegiance to Roger Wicker, any of them are. Again, I don't want to really pick on Roger Wicker. Just to vote for any of these establishment creatures, I wouldn't spend a moment of my day on a primary day to make sure that I got to the polls to get the little sticker. I would imagine most of these people are probably senior citizens, and they kind of stewed in this idea that voting is so important and they want the sticker and all that stuff. But Jim Cramer's kind of the same way. 2 million people follow Jim Cramer. Maybe it's jealousy on my part. I certainly did not have 2 million followers. My podcast struggles to get to a few hundred people a day. But 2 million people follow Jim Cramer. And what's just interesting is someone else put out, there are actually people out there. Jim Cramer, 2 million people follow this guy. He's got basically a prime time. I think he comes on at 5 o'clock on CNBC. He's got a very juicy time slot on CNBC where he goes out and he makes stock picks for his people. Hits buttons, rolls up his sleeve, rants and raves. It's all great financial theater. Now, there's actually people out there who run their investment portfolio based on doing exactly the opposite of what Jim Cramer says. He had made a call between Tyson Foods and Beyond Meat. About 30 months ago, Jim Cramer had come out and said he weighed in on two stocks. Specifically, he indicated that Tyson Foods was about to get its butt beat by Beyond Meat. This is a tweet that Jim Cramer sent out. Beyond Meat is skating where the puck is going. This offends me in a whole host of ways because I use that phrase for this radio show. I believe that is what I'm doing. But Beyond Meat is skating to where the puck is going. Tyson won't know what hit them in the end. This is 30 months ago. How's that going now? Tyson is up 29%. Not spectacular over 30 months, but Tyson stock is up 29%. Beyond Meat, it's down 85%. Jim Cramer. It's just astounding to me. The people who succeed, the people who have some level of success and popularity in all kinds of different areas, are just some of the worst people out there for us. You look at the highest paid federal employee in the United States is the mini Mengele himself, Anthony Fauci. It's just amazing. And there's so many smart people out there in the world with good things to contribute. They don't seem to gain any traction. Jim Cramer, Anthony Fauci, to the top of their fields. Just pretty amazing. I wanted to just mention this for myself, because I just find myself so amazed by it. Whether or not anybody else is interested in it or not, I don't know. The bond market, as I've explained to you over and over again, this is where you're going to get real familiar with the bond market and the credit and debt markets very soon, I believe. But they're boring, and I mention this every time I talk about it. But this is just something interesting. If you look at the rates around the world, the U.S. bond rates, the 10-year rate, that's kind of the benchmark rate for interest rates. This is what home mortgages are set on. And the 10-year rate has continued to go up pretty dramatically over the past couple of weeks. It currently sits at 3.442%. And this is forcing mortgages up towards close to 7% now for people who don't believe that we're going to have any level of a housing bust. I'm here to tell you, if this continues, you can only imagine. People were paying 3% for mortgages about 18 months ago. Now they're paying 7%. That's going to dramatically affect housing prices. But anyway, the U.S. is paying 3.4% if you loan them money for 10 years. Germany will pay you 1.7% if you loan them money for 10 years. Italy's paying 3.9%, almost 4%. Spain is paying 2.8%. Great Britain is paying 3.1%. Japan is paying 0.25%, a quarter of 1%. Japan has put in an official policy where they are pegging their 10-year rate to a quarter of 1%. Now, ask yourself, if you're an investor anywhere on planet Earth and you're looking to park money, buy a bond backed by a government somewhere known to be, at least up till now, I think at some point this may change, but up to now, some of your safest investments, because governments always pay because they have the ability to strip money from the pockets of their citizens to pay to their bondholders. It's quite an incredible power. You know, you can buy a corporate bond, but most corporations, except for Pfizer and Moderna, most corporations can't force you. They can't strip money out of your pocket. Federal governments can across the world. So it's pretty safe to buy their bonds. They're typically always going to pay their bonds off, even if they have to pay them with more bonds, because they have that power to tax, to steal. So if you're around the world anywhere and you're looking to park some money, are you going to ever buy a Japanese bond? If you buy a U.S. bond, you're going to get 3.4%. If you buy an Italian bond, you're going to get almost 4%. A Spanish bond, you're going to get 2.8%. Why in the hell would you ever buy a Japanese bond where you're only getting a quarter of 1%? Well, obviously nobody ever would. So what Japan is doing, and it's going to be very interesting to know how long this experiment lasts. This has been going on. I think they made this policy official 4, 5, maybe 6 months ago. I don't even know if I commented on it at the time. But essentially, obviously, nobody is loaning Japan money, even if you're a Japanese citizen, even if you're a Japanese insurance company. You know, a lot of insurance companies in the U.S. and around the world will buy U.S. bonds as part of their portfolio, how they invest their excess reserves to make money on it between collecting premiums and paying out claims. But even Japanese citizens would look around and go, I'm not buying one of my own country's bonds. It's only paying a quarter of a percent. I can go to the U.S. and get 3.4%. So Japan is, what they're doing is their central bank, their Bank of Japan, is just printing up money to buy all of the Japanese bonds. Essentially, the federal government of Japan, now they're a little different in that they probably don't have to sell as many bonds as the U.S. More on that in just a minute. Because they actually are an exporting economy. They actually produce things in Japan and sell them around the world. They have a trade surplus, so they're always attracting new money in. So they're not under the burdens that a debt-based society like the U.S. is. But still, this is such an amazing experiment. If this was really doable, countries would have been doing it for centuries. Print up money, loan it to the federal government. Print up money, loan it to the government. If that was a long, sustainable path, every country in the world would be doing it. Now, the Federal Reserve has been doing it here in the United States, too. But this idea of pegging there, of printing up so much money because nobody else is going to buy Japanese bonds, they're basically monetizing all of their debt. This is a first world country, Japan. I cannot imagine how long this lasts. It's quite something to watch. I was listening to the weather forecast the other day, and they were talking about fake fall. Have you heard this term, fake fall? We've had a couple of days where in the morning I was actually a little chilly. Felt fantastic to walk out of the house. It was just a little slight chill, the kind of the perfect temperature. And so the newscaster came on and said, oh, I guess apparently we got heat coming next week. And so they called it fake fall. Don't get used to it. It's fake fall. We'll be back up into the 90s next week. And I thought, well, that makes perfect sense. We should have fake fall because we've got fake news. We've got fake wars. We've got fake politics. We've got a fake pandemic and a fake economy. So it makes perfect sense that we'll start to have fake seasons as well. Listen to this. This is Joe Biden's prosperous economy, where they tell you we're humming on all cylinders. Americans have grown fond of buy now, pay later services, but the pay later part is becoming increasingly difficult for some borrowers. Buy now, pay later loans allow users to pay for items such as new sneakers. Electronics or luxury goods in installments. Companies like Affirm, Afterpay, Klarna, and PayPal have built popular financial products around these short-term loans, particularly for younger borrowers who are fearful of never-ending credit card debt. I got to tell you, if you have a country where the people are having to make payments, installment payments on their shoes, you do not have a prosperous economy. So apparently, I don't know exactly what the mechanism is. This should be interesting to see when we start to see headlines about the great shoe repossessions out there. You may see it happen. I don't know how they, you know, we know what it looks like when a tow truck pulls up to repossess a car. We know what it looks like when somebody's evicted from their home. But it's going to be very interesting to see the new repossession of people's shoes. You'll be sitting in a restaurant. Suddenly, three big burly guys will come in there and tip over someone sitting in their chairs and take their shoes and leave the restaurant. This is a fake economy. We're making payments on our shoes. How far we've fallen. I'll be right back. I swear, you may be able to hear it. I've got a little bit of extra energy today. I am literally excited because this afternoon I am going down to Hattiesburg to meet Katie Stonington with Stonington Farm to pick up my order of grass-fed, no hormone, no antibiotic beef from our friends at Stonington Farm. I am literally excited about this. I've talked about it on my health show. I'm going to be doing a carnivore way of eating for a little while, see how that affects my health, see how I do on that. I approached this with somebody in the medical community yesterday. They weren't supportive of my decision, which makes me think I'm onto something. But anyway, I'm excited to go down there. I'll be getting a bunch of ribeyes, chuck-eye steaks, some short ribs, some liver. I got to figure out how to make liver. I can't do it with onions or any vegetables on a carnivore diet, but it's so nutritious. The organ meat. So anyway, I'm just extremely excited about it. You can be excited about your meals as well. If you like to check out StoningtonFarm.com, StoningtonFarm.com. This is a local Mississippi rancher. Got a place down there in Perkiston, Mississippi, where they breed their cows right here. They raise their cows on good quality, non-chemically treated grass, just like cows intended. No hormones, no antibiotics, and they process the meat right here in Mississippi as well. I am getting some good, fresh, nutritious meat, and it is costing me less because I'm buying a good chunk of it. Going to cost me less than it would be if I went down to the local store and got some of the factory-farmed stuff. So check out Stonington Farm at StoningtonFarm.com. They do ship bulk orders up to the Jackson area for free, and we're looking at putting together maybe a day or 2 days a month where either myself or one of their employees comes up here and doles out some smaller orders. If you're interested in that, email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. I may start a small mailing list, just keep people updated if we announce some kind of a drop-off where people can place smaller orders. I don't have the storage spot for a half a cow right now, so I couldn't get that. But if you want smaller orders, you want some good quality meat, I'm telling you. And this is a way to support a small local farmer. Look, people, the way the economy's shaping up, you better get to know some farmers. I am telling you right now, you need to have a relationship. One thing I love about Stonington Farm is that I have a relationship with somebody that creates great quality beef. I think there may be a time where I'm going to be glad to kind of be on the front end of their list, somebody who's a loyal customer of theirs, because I think there's a time where that may be very important. So if you want to email me, if you're interested in picking up smaller orders from them, or at least announcements about pickup spots for them, email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. I've got my health segment is my longest running segment. When I first came to WYAB, and we were talking about what I wanted to do for the format of my show, I said I'd like to dedicate an hour. I think I'll call it Hump Day Health. I'll do it on Wednesdays, and I'm going to talk about natural health topics. That was fine. That was the first. I did that the very first week I was here. But one of the most recurring segments on my show has been stories that run from CNS News. I don't control this segment. I just wait for the headlines to come out from our friends at CNS News that break this stuff down. I have explained to you why the Federal Reserve cannot raise interest rates. They cannot allow them to actually go to the level that would suppress inflation, and this is why, just go ahead and face facts, get used to it now, inflation is here to stay. Now, what may tamp down inflation is a deep, deep recession slash depression. Now, we need this. I know that's not fun to face, but we need this to clear away a lot of the debt that we've accumulated because we're very, very selfish, narcissistic adults, and we've destroyed this country financially for our children, led by the nose by politicians who have convinced us to borrow everything. So we need to pay the piper so that our kids don't have to. Nut up, buttercup. It's time to pay the piper. We've lived high off the hog, well beyond our means, for decades and decades. You've enjoyed it. Time to take the pain so you don't pass on this debt to your children. So this is what we need. It's much like if you've been at a party and you've developed a bad drinking habit. At some point, you got to stop. Well, we're about to stop, and we're going to have the hangover and the withdrawals and all that good stuff. But it's part of nature. It's got to happen. But I've explained to you the Federal Reserve cannot raise interest rates, so the inflation is here, and I'm going to show you exactly why they can't raise interest rates. This is one of these stories that, as I say, comes about every month, every quarter. CNS News is the only one that really covers this kind of in the same format every time. The federal government collected a record. This is always the story. For 5.5 years, I've been behind this microphone, and every one of these stories that I've read to you, every single report that comes out of CNS News, it's a record collection for the federal government. The federal government collected a record $4,408,452,000,000 in total taxes in the first 11 months of fiscal 2022. That is $4,408,452,000,000 taken out of the productive economy, out of the pockets of businesses and individuals in this country, and sent up to this black hole known as Washington, D.C. That was up $525,658,170,000, or 13.5% from the then record, $3.8 trillion. That the federal government collected in the first 11 months of fiscal 2021. So we've set another record of Washington, D.C., like a black hole sucking money into it. But it gets even worse, of course. The other predictable part of this story is, even though it collected the record $4.4 trillion in taxes in the first 11 months of the fiscal year, the federal government still ran a deficit of $945,715,000,000 during this period because it spent $5,354,000,000. Record tax collections, we will eclipse a $1 trillion deficit this year. This is what I say. All of you people out there, right or left, who have voted for this stuff, why am I on the hook for any of this? I haven't participated in this. I cut off my ties to anybody. Well, except for Trump. Trump duped me into one vote, only one. I caught on after a while, but I want you to listen to this statistic. And this is why I'm telling you they cannot let interest rates go up. So when you hear them say they are dedicated to fight inflation, the Fed is going to maintain the course, come hell or high water, they're going to tame this inflation, they can't. This is the game changer, the difference between now and back in 2008 or back in 1980. It's a different ball game now because we have so much debt. Check this out. Check out this number. Of this $5.4 trillion that they've spent, this includes interest on the debt. And this is the number that I've told you. As interest rates go up, this number gets out of control. Now, interest rates have barely budged. Maybe that's a little disingenuous. They've gone up pretty dramatically from zero. But now where they should be at 8, 9, 10, 12%. If they wanted to combat inflation, then our interest rates should be a positive number. You understand, if you've got inflation running at 8.3% and you've got interest rates at 3%, that's a negative interest rate. a negative real interest rate of about 5%. They need to have real positive interest rates, which means over and above the rate of inflation, but they can't do that. In this first 11 months, these people in Washington, D.C., and I don't know why people aren't upset about this. I really, really don't. I don't know why not one of your Congress critters, for all the time I've been around and paid attention and listened to politicians get asked questions by constituents at town halls, why this question never really comes up. This money includes $677,612,000,000 in interest on the debt. This is still with historically low interest rates, even though they've edged up a little bit. $677 billion is stripped out of the U.S. economy and sent to Washington, D.C. to pay for the interest. We're not paying back the debt. We're not paying back the debt. We're actually accumulating more debt. This is just interest on the debt. And I've told you this number has been, with the zero interest rates, this number has been somewhere in the $300 to $400 billion a year. They steal money out of your paycheck, force you to jump through all kinds of hoops, making sure you get ready for that April 15th. I'm a law-abiding taxpayer. And you jump through all those hoops to April 15th, make sure that you get everything in on time. You're out at the post office at 11:49. Whew. Oh, I got it in the... Oh, the post office has those guys out by the boxes to make sure up till midnight so these, you can do it on time. All the things you go through, 677, and that's 11 months. It's not even a full year yet. We'll get the total figure. It obviously is going to eclipse $700 billion just in interest on what Thad Cochran spent, on what Trent Lott spent, on what Tom Daschle spent decades ago. On what George Bush spent, on what Donald Trump spent, on what Barack Obama spent, what all these people spent years and years ago, they have plucked $677. That's a lot of money. $677 billion, that's a lot of money. It's going to no productive use. It's not building your roads or your bridges. It's not funding your military. I saw a story the other day. They're proposing food stamps for the military, I believe it was what the headline said. All those endless budgets the conservatives have cheered for, turns out you didn't make the soldiers really rich. Oh, you made Raytheon rich, United Technologies rich. Soldiers, they're considering putting them on food stamps now because they can't afford the cost of living. $677 billion, and interest rates aren't done rising. You understand that if interest rates got to a normal rate, the rate that would be needed to fight inflation, we would probably be paying about $2 trillion just on interest on the debt. And it just mystifies me why no voters care. Roger Wicker, Michael Guest, Thad Cochran in his time here, they all were able to move about us in public. Nobody ever demanding that they renounce this kind of spending. No, for Thad Cochran, he was actually kept in office based on the fact that he had the checkbook to overspend. Mississippians actually kind of facilitated a lot of this for endless support. I remember listening to some of the WGOP radio stations at the time that Chris McDaniel was challenging Thad Cochran, and they said, well, you can't take Thad Cochran out of there with his seniority. He's a head of the Appropriations Committee. This is what the Appropriations Committee does. It overspends. $677 billion just in interest. They should be able to run the entire federal government just on that and not touch a penny in our pockets. But nobody cares. You're in the political theater. You won't ask these questions because it might make you seem weird at a campaign stop, at a town hall. You don't dare question the R's. You just talk about the D's and how bad they are when you run into a Roger Wicker, Cindy Hyde-Smith, Michael Guest. $677 billion just in interest. This country is lost, and the people don't care about getting it back, apparently. Be right back. right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. You know what I find amazing about the fact that the government has got its citizens basically just going along with this debt scheme, with stripping you of your wealth, wealth that you could provide for your family and build, really build something. All Americans, absent particularly federal taxation, could really build some kind of financial wealth. They are going to take $677 billion away from people to pay interest. If my children got in trouble with some credit cards, I would probably help them out. It's almost a rite of passage. I went through it. I did dumb things when I was a kid. But if I did that once, and then they did it again, and then they did it again, and they did it, you know, repeatedly, and they came to me and said, you know, Dad, I'm in some trouble. I've run up credit card debt again. I can't pay this stuff. I'm in big trouble here. I would say, you know, I've helped you. I've helped you several times. You haven't learned your lesson. You're probably going to find yourself in bankruptcy or something. You have to. If I can't convince you to stop the behavior, I'm going to have to let you really bear the consequences of it. It seems like it might be the only way to teach you the lesson. I would cut them off. These are people, children, that I love with my whole heart, that I would certainly give up my life for. I have no greater love in this world than I have for my children, and I would cut them off. Yet we've got a political class that most of us, let's be honest, we hate them. Now, not all of them. Some of us fall in love with one or two of them here or there. But the political class who's responsible for this devastation, this economic devastation for our country, we really don't like them. They're the butt of jokes. And yet we continue to facilitate what they're doing. I'm asked to somehow support the profligacy and the irresponsibility of the political class when I wouldn't even do that for my own children that I love with all of my heart. Quite amazing, quite amazing. I wanted to explain this to you, too. One of the reasons the government is collecting so much money right now, it's not because of the fake economy that Joe Biden says is just humming on all cylinders. I've explained to you that inflation is not an act of God. It's not a natural disaster. Inflation is a policy. It is a policy by your federal government and created by the Federal Reserve by printing up money. It's not a mistake. Now, they don't like it when the consequences of what they did during COVID in particular suddenly makes the little people start whining. We're very annoying to them. It's kind of like a mosquito buzzing around your ear. You know, it's not really going to hurt you, but you still want to swat it away. So that's kind of how they view us. We won't shut up about the high gas prices and stuff, and the politicians are scared they might lose their power if we're so dissatisfied. So they're like, all right, we'll do something about the inflation. But make no mistake, inflation is a policy. I'll explain that to you. The more things cost, the more profit in nominal dollars is made. And when more profit is made in those dollars, more taxes are paid. Okay, if something costs $100 and the company is selling it and has a 30% margin, it means for every one of these products it sells, it makes $30 in profit. And imagine they are taxed 20% on that profit. That's $6 in taxes paid on every $100 item that they sell that they make $30 off of. Are you with me? If that same product, because of inflation, now costs $120 and the company maintains its 30% profit margin, then instead of making $30 on each product, now they're making $36 on that same item. And that 20% in taxes is now $7.20 for every item sold. They pay $7.20 in taxes instead of the $6. You understand how this works? So the government loves inflation because it takes more dollars. When things cost more, it creates more in tax revenue, and they are able to expand what they spend money on. They've got more money to dole out, more political favors, bigger budgets for things that they want. They want, not what we want, what they want. So inflation is a policy. It's also one of these things where they feel like, well, we can spend a bunch of money this year because next year with inflation, we're going to be getting more tax dollars in because everything's going to cost more. And that means more taxes will be paid. They even love it when inflation comes, and when it's big like this, a lot of you got some cost of living adjustments. Hell, Social Security, I can't wait to see what their cost of living adjustment is when it comes out. I don't think it's out yet. Those people that are taxed on their Social Security, you got to love that. They strip you of your wealth, your entire working life, then they give it back to you, and then they take some of that back too. But when you get a raise, when wages have to go up because employers have to pay their employees more, because employees can't afford to work for what they used to work for, because the inflation has eaten away that old income, now they need to make more. Well, then when you make more, when tax time comes, you pay more too. So this is a policy by your government, Republican and Democrat. They love inflation. Gives them a bigger pot of money to swim in. So just think about that when you're griping about the high prices. Understand that it's a game. It's a game that's run on you. Now, they're going to try to get it down. It's like I say, sometimes when it pops up like this unexpectedly. Now, here's the thing I'm suspecting, too. Just take this as kind of a prediction. Inflation may come back down. If we have a pretty severe recession, inflation may come back down. The numbers they report, now understand the numbers they report are about half of what real world inflation is. You can go to shadowstats.com and see if we calculated inflation the way they did back in the 1980s, what the real inflation rate today would be. They monkey around with the numbers to make you think it's not as bad as you think it is. They'll bring inflation down, you know, the bad economy in a recession because demand will drop and people will lose jobs. Inflation may come down to around 5%. And here's the fun thing. And just like taxes, when they run taxes up, see, Americans now, and even the most patriotic conservatives that I know, the freedom fighters out there, they genuflect to Donald Trump because he gave them a 3%. Instead of taking 28% of your money, he only took 25%. So he was a god. The idea of the fact that the federal government picking your pocket in the first place for even one penny is beyond people's even comprehension. They thank political deities for giving them a 5% tax cut. But what they're going to do is, so they raise taxes to 28% so that when it's only 23% for you, you're so grateful that you contribute to the campaigns of people who only steal 23% for you. See how it is? So inflation right now at 8%, when it goes to 5%, everybody will be thankful. It'll kind of be the new normal. Now, the 5% in real world will actually be 10% because they cut it about in half to try to trick us. And then that 5%, and then it'll go up to 19%. Everybody will freak out and grumble a little bit. But then something, you know, that will dramatically affect the economy. So it'll float back down to maybe around 11%. And then people will be content with the 11%, even though that's 3% higher than it is right now and we're griping, because they will kind of stretch that limit to where, well, at least it's not still 19%. Now it's just 11%. If it was 11% today, we'd be out on the streets. This is the boiling frog kind of scenario. So inflation is going to maintain a high level, much higher than it's been. But it's going to have these big exacerbated moves. And then when it retreats a little bit, Americans will go, oh, whew, thank goodness, inflation's only 11% now. They will totally have forgotten back when inflation was only 1.5%. They will be thankful for the 11%. Mark it in the book. That's a prediction. A Mike Madison prediction. We'll be right back.
At first I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. And so you're...
All right, only a couple of minutes left in this hour. Oh, as a matter of fact, boy, only a few seconds left in this hour. I wanted to mention something real quick because I don't know. Bitcoin's down below 20,000, but I ran across this story and my spidey senses are going off. I see this headline on Zero Hedge: Citadel-backed crypto exchange targets November for soft launch. Citadel's latest exchange project that it is going to allow for investing in digital assets and crypto tokens is almost ready for launch. The exchange called EDX Markets is backed by Charles Schwab, Fidelity Digital Assets, Paradigm, Sequoia Capital, Citadel Securities, and Virtue Financial, according to a report from Bloomberg. Let me just tell you why I think this this matters. I don't know the fate of cryptocurrencies. I do believe we are at the cusp of a central bank digital currency. They're doing these things all around the world. This, I believe, is the big hammer of the Great Reset, is to corral us all into these digital currencies, totally controlling your financial world through the government and their central banks. Citadel is like the handmaid of the Fed. I'm a little suspicious that they're going to be out there trading Bitcoin. Now, these are exchanges. Let me just put it this way. With all those names I just named, all those financial institutions, you better report every nickel of money you make and all the gains on your cryptos, because these people are tied in with the government. Ben Bernanke, former head of the Fed, works for Citadel. I'll just put it that way. Very suspicious of this stuff. We'll see. I'm a fan of Bitcoin. I don't believe in its valuation as it currently exists, but when Citadel is involved in it, something seems a little wanky to me.
Right into this world, all alone, God takes your soul.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. Every Thursday from 10 to 11 o'clock, we have our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with a representative from Americans for Prosperity who are out there fighting for our economic freedoms. I've got a story about that we'll get to in just a minute, but today we've got Cade Yates in studio with us. Cade, good to have you back.
Absolutely, man. Always glad to come back.
Yeah, I told you. I thought you had broken up with me. We hadn't seen you in a while. They're keeping you running with the organization?
Yeah, no, mostly in the office reading bills and policy papers and trying to, hey, the best part is the coalition's building, you know, getting people together around central ideas of you know, better healthcare without government, you know, more free markets in healthcare, technology, what we call sandboxes around issues like agriculture and pieces like that. And then other issues.
All about getting government out of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And sitting around the table with like-minded individuals that have each individual talent and skill, or some of them are in positions. I mean, it's funny. We do have people from agencies from the government who are like, yeah, these are really bad policies and we want to change it. It's very few, but but it's always awesome to sit around the table with people that have always been, you would think would be at odds with you. But I mean, at the end of the day, there are good people that have started waking up in government positions going, hey, we have to change things or else we're not going to be able to grow over the next 10 years and survive the, you know, the recession that we're in now.
Yeah. Well, you know, that is probably the most frustrating thing to me about politics, and where I'm kind of on a roll today. I haven't had my testosterone levels tested, but I feel like my anger is, you know, and it's all directed to this. I don't get mad at a purple haired barista. That's my gig. No. I think we're all victims of this system. But, you know, the fact that the American people can look across the landscape and see how many things. Just look at education in the state of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. It is not hard to acknowledge we've got a massive problem in that tinkering around the edges or doing a little bit more, giving a little bit more money to the same system. I mean, it is quite obvious that these things need wholesale changes. Almost, we're going to throw out the old playbook. We're going to find out what's worked historically, which was probably education in the 50s and 60s and 70s before the Department of Education got created. You know what I mean? It's these solutions are not difficult, yet we, and I'm not going to say we, screw we, I don't do it, but most people support a political class that has no interest in throwing away the old playbook because it's working great for them.
Yeah, and it fits the status quo, and I went to public schools. I went through the process of the initiation of the community where it's like, oh, the football team is playing and the baseball team is playing and, oh, we're going to have pep rallies and all this. Listen, I understand. I've been there. I get it. But the problem, again, the education piece is a huge thing that we're going to be working on next year and throughout the next, hopefully, 10 years of just radically transforming education. Because, again, I think we've lost sight of what the education system is about. And actually radically transforming people's lives through education. I think there's an ability for our nation to see a new peak, a new, you know, again, the great again, the Make America Great Again thing. There's so much more we can do on the other side of this, where if we educate people, we give people the talents and resources to become entrepreneurs and inventors and just entrepreneurs of their own, we can actually see America reach peaks that we've never seen before. Because, again, around the world, there are the markets are controlled and the people are controlled, and this is the only place where freedom and technology, if we can get our laws in place and educate our younger generation, we can actually see an America that we've never seen before. So I'm a little bit optimistic. And again, there's that class of people that put their trust in politicians and put their trust in old systems. And those are what we call mental models. We call those these kind of mind traps that you kind of get stuck in and say, this is the best way we can do it. And there are ways that we've never even thought of that are out there that with an evolution of education and policy in the government space, we can see things that we've never seen before.
Well, it's so simple. I mean, the business model, the free market model is so, it's so pure and it works so well. If you have a restaurant, you can open up 30 restaurants in an area. The ones that suck, the ones where their service is bad, their food's no good, maybe the taste is bad, the quality, they just go out of business. They're just gone. So they're no longer a problem of us saying some of our food in our restaurants is terrible. No, they just run those people out of business. They lose their business, and the businesses that do it right thrive, and they become big, and they open more locations because people demand their products. Well, it's no different than the same thing with education. I'm telling you, though, I'm just fresh off of, and I can't play it because there's some FCC no-no words in it. But just before I came on air today, I just ran across George Carlin's It's a Big Club and You Ain't In It, where he explains, and he died in 2008. I think this comedy special was in 2002, 2003, something like that. Yeah. But he basically said, they are not interested, and by the they, it is the people driving these policies. And you can really see, I can see it. They are not interested in a well-educated citizenry that is capable of critical thinking.
Yeah.
That is not to the benefit of people who want to control a society. In no way, shape, or form are they interested. You know, I think it was, you know, Hitler went after the intellectuals. One of the first things he did, he targeted people who thought.
Pol Pot did that as well.
Right.
I mean, targeting the intellectuals, anybody that would think outside the box.
Right. So they have successfully dumbed us down. Yep. I believe Idiocracy will prove to be a documentary
at some point. Real, man.
It's getting so close. And I believe that their intention is we are going to make these people so unprepared for any level of true success that they'll be grateful for whatever we throw at them.
Yeah.
And that's where we are right now. They have no interest in people being able to think for themselves, because any thinking person would never support this system. And yet we've got, and what Carlin says is they want you just smart enough to be able to operate the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to accept the rest of it.
Well, and that's the problem is I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He's come to Mississippi before to talk with one of our coalition partners around education, and Don Nielsen. And Don, he has this beautiful almost rant but speech on where our education system came from. And our education system was designed around putting people in rows and making sure they're doing their work and giving them enough education to work on a factory line. And back in the 1870s, okay, great. You know, a lot of the jobs were in that space. But now, once we hit that hockey stick of human progress where I mean, we sent people to the stars. I mean, we've put people
to the moon.
I didn't want to go there because I knew you were going to be like,
saw you pulling back from starting to say the moon, to the stars.
But
I couldn't resist.
That's not a conspiracy theory I stick to. But the thing is, we put computers in our hands. We've done so much, and the rate of poverty in the world has decreased so much because of innovation and human progress and getting government out of the way and letting people
in spite of government. Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is our education system was really put in place to educate factory workers, and that is not where we're going. And again, there's going to be people that are working on factory lines and doing welding and all that, and that's great, and I want them to be able to seize every opportunity. But if they have innovations, we should be able to allow them to seek those innovations. Or if they want to start off and go into that early on, let them go in that early on. But also, the kids that are sitting there going, man, I hate English. I hate this, or I hate that. You know, again, have the basics. But if they want to see mathematics and rockets and go into tech and innovation or whatever, let's give those kids the opportunity to seize that moment. Because again, for me, I probably would have been in the space I am now, but I feel like I could have got a lot more specialized education that wouldn't have taken me an extra 10 years to get.
Well, if you see kids, and it doesn't matter if it's a hobby or if it's something around the house, when you see something that kind of sparks them and they get enthusiastic about, you know, so for some kids, it's music. I mean, I see these kids as a frustrated, you know, wannabe rock star and all that stuff. And I played guitar in a band. I wasn't particularly good at it. I just wanted to be out front where the girls were. And, but, you know, I see these kids who they discover a love of music when they're 5 years old. And by 8 years old, they're on YouTube just shredding on a guitar. Or I see these little girls playing drums. When you see that, it engages the passion in somebody. They can do that very young. School, like, strips that from you, you know, because understandably in that model, a teacher can't indulge the passion of 26 kids sitting in a classroom. They have to try to get them all to just this median level. And the only way you can wrangle all these kids with diverse interests and diverse backgrounds is through complete obedience. You know, they can't disrupt the class. You know, so you stifle what is beautiful about being a human being and us all being different with different passions, and you just crush it into this this obedient, like you say, sit in your desk, sit still, sit in a row, and raise your hand if you need to pee. You know, that's not human nature.
Yeah, and also one of the things that I've seen pointed out that I love that, you know, again, Don Nielsen pointed out, was if you take 2 5-year-olds and 1 5-year-old is raised in a house with loving parents and a stable, safe environment, and they have access to someone that helps them read and go through the problems. But then you take another 5-year-old who's in an unsafe environment, one or less parents in the home. I mean, just continue down the road of an unsafe environment, no direct hands-on approach at home. And you stick those kids in the same classroom and expect the same results after 12 years of the same path. It's not going to work.
Right.
And again, I know there's specialized classes in our public schools today, but again, I really do think, and our organization believes, there's options of micro schools and charter schools and private schools that can. And again, if your child accelerates in math, I've seen the classrooms and the charter schools and the micro schools in other states that have allowed students to take that path. And those students were given opportunities that they would never have seen in just a regular class that's just saying, hey, let's get to the benchmarks and the basic levels and let's just get you to where in college maybe you can get to where you want to be. No, there's an ability, I think, once you get to, again, recognizing those true natural talents that parents see.
Right, yeah.
Once those parents see that, that's when the education system requires access to education systems that are unique to the child's talents and abilities, but also has to have parent involvement, and also has to have government has to have government get out of the way and allow parents to access those educational systems that they see that their child fits best in.
Yeah. So I deal with some homeschooling parents, mm-hmm. and oftentimes I see them with their kids, and I tell you, it is sometimes stunning. So I interview for jobs, mm-hmm. a lot of entry-level employees, and a lot of them are recent high school graduates, some kids in high school. They've come out of public schools and stuff like that. I have a difficult time with many of them conversing. They mm-hmm. they seem to have a real difficulty of really comprehending a professional interview. They're not prepared. They're not communicative. They're not it's sad. It's not their fault. They don't have that home support. They've been put through 12 years of education that is just designed to teach to a test, and even that fails. And then I see these kids. I'm thinking of a couple right now, and the parents may be listening to the show at some point today. They come up, and their eyes light up when they see me. That's the wrong way to put it. Not because of me, but I see this life in their eyes when I look at them, and I'll say, "Well, how was school today?" And they immediately, you know, we started studying this. I mean, they are so engaged. Yeah. They're so mature. They're so communicative. They are so. I mean, it's almost stunning to see. You know, one of these kids, I don't know how old this kid I'm thinking of is. He's maybe 12. He was talking about his logic class, and they're mm-hmm. taking some debate classes.
Yeah.
I would hire this guy for jobs that I'm hiring 20-year-olds for and be much more confident of him being a help and a positive influence with these kids, because their mind is unlocked by taking off the shackles of traditional education, and the difference is stark.
Exactly. And that's the thing is, I grew up, I grew up in the public school system, but I've known people over the last 10 to 15 years that homeschooled their kids, and I saw what they were doing, and I was like, oh my goodness, if I would have had this.
Yeah.
And again, they go to, I guess they call it Classical Conversations, which is like a co-op of all the families.
Yeah, they bring them together.
Yeah, yep. They bring them together. And it's, it's almost a micro school. And again, these children I have seen grow up over time, and the level that they are reaching right now, I mean, these kids are going to be unstoppable. And
we're all going to be working for the homeschool kids.
Hey, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Teen Pact, which is like the teen government kind of just teaching kids how government works, and, you know, they pass bills and
do
all
they
this.
Teach the evils of government? Do I need to try to get a guest speaker spot there
know.
To make sure
know.
That they understand?
But they the few times that I've been there, it's been amazing to be able to watch these kids get in there and debate and actually think.
Yeah,
and
think.
Really get into the logic of like, oh, if I'm going to design bills, if I'm going to write bills, if I'm going to be in this system at some point, I need to understand there are consequences to my actions. Because that's one thing that a lot of politicians or bureaucrats that don't, they've never thought about that. They go, I'm going to pass a bill to limit cell phone usage for teenagers or something. So they might pass a bill where, again, this is all hypothetical, where 12-year-olds can't own phones.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I mean, that 12-year-old might need it for emergency services or whatever. And it's all in good intention sometimes. Sometimes it's not. Again, I acknowledge that there are bad actors in our political system. But when you pass laws that have unintended consequences, again.
Which is every one of them.
Every single one of them. But when you can limit those, you can actually be responsible in the way that you govern. Again, I feel like we're definitely... You might be me in a few years where I'm like, I don't know, the system is completely lost. I still have hope. I still have hope as long as we can get people involved. And that's why I do what I do. I still believe that there is hope for people getting involved with the system. It's definitely getting mad is one of those reactions that I see the most from people. And then there's the despair, like we're never going to be able to change it. But then there is the glimmer of hope that I see in some of these homeschool kids or some of these kids that come out of public school and go, man, I really need to expand my thinking.
I am probably one of the most hopeful people because I realize the potential to change all these things is really quite simple.
Yes.
Many parents in JPS would you interview one-on-one and say, how do you think Jackson Public Schools is doing for your child? Do you really feel like it's setting them up for the future? I would imagine 95% of them would go, not really. No, they've got chaos in those schools. My kid can't learn because there's disruptions in the class. It's not hard.
Yeah.
So everybody, and I understand the power, if people would come together and just say, enough of this, enough of the $677 billion we spent so far this year on interest on the national debt. No more. I mean, you get 330 million Americans on page with that, that alone.
Yeah.
You guys ran the debt up, deal with it. You're not taking it from us anymore. We're out. We're done. You're dissolved. You no longer, you know, I have that hope that eventually there can be an awakening. But then I get into conversations with people where they immediately, they just like, I know it's that Biden or it's all Trump's, you know what I mean? It's like people can't think their way through these things. That's where I get depressed. We have the potential to end all of these kinds of bad things within a within a few weeks.
Yeah.
If we had, you know,
if we had people on the same page.
Yeah. And somebody who would try to get people on the same page rather than always trying to divide people. And that's why I say division always works. Anyway. Yeah. All right. Went long on the same. We're talking to Cade Yates, Americans for Prosperity. He indulges me as I just start. you indulge the rant, but we want to find out what you guys are up to. We'll get back to more with him when we come back.
Tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open.
All right, we are back talking to Cade Yates, Americans for Prosperity. I don't know if you heard me, first hour. $677 billion dollars on interest. That number is up substantially from it had been in the $300 to $400 billion, which is outrageous to think.
Yeah.
We are asking people entering the workforce right now who were not even alive when most of this, you know, much, not most, because last Trump administration, Biden administration are tacking on debt at record paces. But, I mean, they were not voting age, and they are stepping into a country that they should inherit, and we should have left in good shape for them. With we will approach, if interest rates keep going up, and they need to, it will approach $1 trillion a year just in interest on the debt. This is I believe this is a crime against our children. I mean,
I get it. I get it. I agree. I mean, it's ridiculous that we have let people in Washington run our country into the ground with monetary policy.
Yes.
And I cannot understand.
With nothing to show for it.
Yeah, with nothing. I mean, the money that was sent out, there's so much unspent money still out there that it is, I mean, I can't remember the number, but it is a ridiculous amount of money that is still unspent. And I mean, if we can see the national debt where it was in, 2000 versus now?
Yeah.
Or, you know, 2005, even after the beginning of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the amount of debt that we've tacked on since 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And again, you're right. And the next generation, the generation that's being put in the workforce now and the generation that's being born now, that's going to be coming up. Man, I just don't know what it's going to be like to walk into a country that is literally so far in debt that we're in crisis of, I mean, one of our sister brands, Concerned Veterans for America, talked about this for years, where they said our national debt is a national security risk.
Absolutely.
And we are putting ourselves in a dangerous position, which, I mean, we're doing that in many other ways.
We have all this talk about China, and this is one of my pet peeves with conservatives who have latched onto the newest enemy that they've been told is just coming over here and taking their stuff. You want to put China in their place? If we were structurally sound financially, we could just wait them out because they are a basket case of communist bad spending and misallocation of resources. They've got huge financial problems. We could just sit back, cross our arms, enjoy a good, prosperous country, and just watch them fail just like the Soviet Union did.
Exactly.
Instead, we have to, you know, rattle with them so that people don't pay attention to the train wreck that is this country.
Absolutely. So, and we're going down the same path.
Absolutely.
If we do not get our spending under control, we will be in the same position that the Soviet Union was in back in, you know, food lines, bread lines, you know, nothing in the grocery stores. Again, we luckily have people that believe in free markets here that really do believe our government has no place in the marketplace other than to keep people safe in certain aspects.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and they don't do that well.
They
either,
don't do that well.
This is I don't know. I think it's criminal. I really do think it's criminal. And anybody who participates in this, and I'm really talking about from the voters on up to the politicians. I mean, you are the people who, and I was one of them. I guess I'm as guilty as anybody. I guess I'm responsible. I'm on the hook for all of the debt up to 2002 before I woke up and said, oh, my God, both these parties are horrific. So, when, you know, whatever was spent by the Republicans in the 1990s, I atone for. But you know, the people that are participating in this, like I said earlier, you know, if my children ran up this kind of debt, maybe once is a mistake, two times is, okay, you're a little thick-headed. But if they did this for decades, I'm not bailing my own children out, and I love them.
Yeah.
But we are asked to sacrifice the wealth of our families, the prosperity of our entire country, because 537 guys and gals, who much of us hold in true contempt because we don't like the political class. These aren't even people we like. And we continue to just bail them out by saying, okay, just take whatever you need to from me to pay for your irresponsibility over the past 75 years.
Your pet projects.
Yes. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. We got to move on to something else. I'm going to lose my mind. All right. We're talking to Cade Yates, Americans for Prosperity. We'll be right back. This is Captain America calling. I bailed you out when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. And we got Cade Yates in here with Americans for Prosperity. So, as always, we want to know what your organization is up to. Y'all are getting poised for – this year is flying by, actually.
It is.
It seems like it's going fast. So, y'all are gearing up for another legislative session.
Yep. Yeah, we've been gearing up, having conversations with legislators who will help us introduce the bills into the legislature and fight for them there. We do have really good policy champions in the legislature that, you know, again, they might not agree with us on everything, but they'll agree with us on healthcare or education or home-based businesses. So, and plus, luckily, what we do is we've been able to share with legislators and our community around us our principles of, you know, mutual benefit, self-actualization, openness, all these terms really mean something when you dig down into them. I don't really have time to get there. But if you'd like to learn more about our principles of who we are, you can always come and join us for a class or come and talk to our staff. And we can talk to you about, you know, the free movement of ideas that allow for people to work together while respecting the dignity and the rights of others. And that's what our purpose is with writing policy and getting policy passed, is it's recognizing we don't want other people to get hurt. We want our free markets to work the way they should be without government intrusion or with minimal government intrusion, and then making sure that people can access the goods and services that they need to live and thrive and survive. So with that comes healthcare. You know, healthcare is a big priority for us. This past year, our organization nationwide started something called the Personal Option. It's a pushback against Obamacare, the public option, you know, putting everybody on a government health plan and just saying, hey, if you've got cancer, we'll get to you when we want to.
Yeah.
You know, again, the rate, again, everybody always talks about Canada and all these other free or all these other government solution healthcare options. And I'll tell you, or not options, requirements a lot of times. And what we've seen is we have to be able to push back against these ridiculous ideas that in other countries literally will kill people. And if we don't actually work together now and actually work towards a better system of free market healthcare here, we're going to see some very devastating consequences. So our work on the personal option is more affordability, greater access, and better quality.
And how is that accomplished?
So with more affordability, we've got legalizing association health plans, expanding affordable insurance options, expanding healthcare savings accounts.
Where do those stand right now? Can you have an HSA?
You can with certain restrictions, and it's with a monetary restriction. I think it's for HSAs. HSAs have a larger amount that you can save money into and you can put back. FSAs, I think my FSA, I can't remember the exact number, but it's a lower amount, but you operate with an insurance plan on that. The HSAs are usually for people with a high deductible insurance plan.
I used to sell a ton of those things because the premiums were so low on high deductible plans, and then the tax savings to putting your money in those HSAs, they started to gain some traction. Then Obamacare came in and just upset the whole apple cart.
Exactly, exactly. And I love the FSA and HSAs because it really does allow me to keep more of my money that's pre-taxed and use it towards healthcare, which is a huge part of my life. I want to live a healthy life. I want to be able to go see the doctor of my choice. And so other pieces that we work on, and this is an example that we've used on the national level, you can actually go to YouTube and look up the personal option and you'll see our CEO, Emily Seidel, come up on the screen and talk about it. And she talks about, you know, if if our healthcare were like restaurants, where if you want to see the menu pricing, you want to know what they're serving, if you want to know if this is a place for what you want and need, you know, that would be the optimal system, is if our system was not, hey, you have to go to this provider and this person and this thing, and you have to go, you have to leave your state to access this care,
right?
Because you have CON laws in place that hamper the amount of providers in your state. You know, there's or telemedicine, you know, limiting telemedicine, not allowing you to access a doctor in another state that might have a specialty in another piece. So again, getting back to the second point was greater access. You know, again, raising awareness around HSAs, letting nurses deliver care for which they're trained, you know, expanding scope of practice. I think we've seen a lot of people in our lives that are nurse practitioners that have these clinics and everything. We want those people to be able to practice to the full scope of their training. As long as they're trained in it, we want them to be able to do that. Let nurses and doctors practice across state lines. A doctor in Alabama's got the same training as doctors in Mississippi, and again, no state in the United States is just going to let somebody become a doctor overnight. And so we should be able to let doctors who are trained and specialize in different areas that work in other states work and operate in Mississippi. And we want to give patients direct access. A lot of people I know that listen to your station and people in our community use direct primary care facilities, which is a cash-based system for doctor usage. Yeah. And there are I can't remember the two doctors' names in Madison, but fantastic guys who are great doctors who really value their patients and give them affordable care for a reasonable price.
Yeah, this is outside of insurance and all that
outside
stuff.
Outside of insurance,
yeah. So they're able to cut down on, I mean, the amount of money that these doctor's offices have to spend on the bureaucracy,
yep,
is just, it's incredible. They've got to bake that into the cake somewhere, and that's what jacks up the price of so many of these things.
That's,
I think, the future of medicine. And it was also the past of medicine.
Exactly.
I can remember to this day laying in my parents' bed whenever I was sick when I was a little kid. I got to go sleep in the big bed,
yep,
and I would sit there because they had a TV in there, and so I could watch some TV, and the doctor would come by the house and check on me. I remember him sitting next to me, you know, sitting on the edge of the bed and taking my temperature and taking a look and all,
yep,
that stuff, and my parents just, you gave him a few bucks and he went on his way.
I mean, exactly.
Oh, it used, yeah, to be so easy.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And so we're in the state of Mississippi specifically. We're working on certificate of need laws around mental health. We're going to be working on ending certificate of need laws, which are laws that specifically say if somebody with a clinic that has, or a doctor or a clinic has money that they want to bring to the state of Mississippi and open up a clinic in a certain area, in 19 different areas across Mississippi, 19 different specific healthcare fields, they have to go before the board of their competitors usually,
yeah,
or people supported by their competitors, and they have to go, hey, listen, I want to open up this facility. Well, let's check and make sure there's a need in that community before you go there.
Yeah, let's ask your competitors if they think you should come in and compete with them.
Exactly.
How crazy is that? Well, what is the first certificate of need that keeps hospitals from opening, keeps other people from coming in and competing? And what is the, what's the thinking that if you have too many hospitals, some of them might go out of business?
So the opposition will clearly say, well, if we don't have a monopoly on the healthcare system, these little small clinics can come in and cherry pick all of the lucrative services off of the big hospitals, and then we can't make enough money to make up for people on Medicaid, Medicare, and all these government
we
services.
We can't. The mess we've created over on this side will swamp us. We'll have to, yep, pay the price for this mess over here if we allow competition to come in and, yep, save people money.
Instead of the hospitals going, hey, we're going to offer this at the same price or a lower price,
yeah,
than these smaller clinics because they got more capital. They can do that. They can turn over at a higher rate. They can see more patients. They can expand how many doctors they have. They can invest. And also the other side of it is, in every state that we have, that we've studied CON, and again, CON has been eliminated Florida, Tennessee. There's a lot of states that have really started to tear down these CON laws, which were a failed federal policy from the 70s. And literally taking apart these policies. We've not seen the mass, the sky falling, hospitals closing. We've actually seen more facilities open up because people need health care. It's going to be something that's going to be around. It's a requirement for our health to, as long as, again, people
as long as you're not me.
I know. One day we'll get Starlong for Hump Day, Health Day, and talk about the wholeness and the wellness.
Right.
But again, healthcare in general, CON is going to be a big part. Again, scope of practice, making sure nurse practitioners can practice the full scope of their ability. And then again, there's going to be some interesting things around pharmacists and telemedicine in that area. Because again, in a rural state, we have different healthcare solutions than a place like California or I guess California has a lot of rural parts as well, and then Texas has a lot of rural parts as well, but there's a difference. And so what we do is we make sure that our healthcare policies that we work on for Mississippi are based on what Mississippi needs are. We believe in a bottom-up approach to policy, not a top-down, you know, expand Medicaid and put everybody on a government system where eventually the system get overwhelmed and people die.
Yeah. In Canada, my aunt up there, got cancer, and they told her, you've got breast cancer. You need to set an appointment with the oncologist or whatever, and she did 8 months.
Yep.
Months is what it took for her to get into this Canadian socialized healthcare system.
Yep.
To get in and have her breast cancer treated. So that, you know, this are they going to expand Medicaid in this state?
There is talks definitely with the Roe v. Wade overturning that saying, hey, you know, we took on this fight of protecting the unborn, so now we have to ensure that each mother and each child gets health care up to 12 months. And unfortunately, there's two problems with that. There's really the number one problem is once you expand this, there's no going back.
Right,
and,
of course.
And again, once you expand it to a certain part of the population, you're going to keep expanding from there. We're one of the 12, 13 states that have held off on Medicaid expansion, and it's paid off its dividends because we really have seen, if we expand Medicaid, over a third of our state would be on government-assisted health care. And again, we want people to get the care they need, but there are better ways to get health care than for the government to get Mississippi on the hook for billions of dollars of federal dollars that might not be there with our debt increasing the way it is.
Yeah, it's going to be a weird race to see what happens first, because if we have what I believe is going to be some pretty tough financial times ahead, more people are going to be pushed into poverty, which is going to increase the calls for Medicaid expansion, and then we're going to have problems actually fulfilling the promises of this Medicaid expansion. I mean, they've screwed this whole thing.
Well, and then on top of that, the problem is we're going to be pushing more people from private healthcare into a government healthcare system, and using their private healthcare that's not subsidized by the government. And the people that want to push back and don't want to be a part of this government entangled system, they're going to be paying for it.
Right.
And so there's just so many problems with Medicaid expansion. What I'd recommend people to do, because I really don't have enough time to talk through it enough, Dr. Jameson Taylor, who is a healthcare guru and really just knows the Medicaid system back and forth, wrote an article in the Daily Journal, and I guess it's out of Tupelo or whatever, but the Daily Journal, and wrote about this, the postpartum expansion of Medicaid. And I'd recommend people going to look that up. He's really fantastic.
He's a smart guy.
He is. And one other piece about the Medicaid piece that I do want to mention is that over the next few years, what we're going to have to do is definitely bring that spending down, and this is not going to be one of those areas where it's sustainable. So, again,
well, particularly if the feds aren't there to backstop Mississippi,
we're
going to have some problems.
Exactly. So,
All right. We got to take a break. We're talking to Cade Yates, Americans for Prosperity. We'll come back and let you know how you can get in touch with them to see more information on their organization. Stick around.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, last couple of minutes of the show. Unfortunately, you were not all privy to the conversation we just had during the commercial break, which was some pretty juicy stuff we'll have to save for the next time. But yeah. Anyway, we're talking to Cade Yates, Americans Prosperity. We've only got about a minute and a half left, so what have y'all got going on now? Yeah. How can people find you?
Absolutely. So the best way to find us is follow us on Facebook, get connected with Stone, our GED in the Jackson metro area, and really the central Mississippi area. Also, team updates. We've hired a guy in North Mississippi named Nathan Moore. And so, and hopefully we'll hire somebody in South Mississippi. So people in the central Mississippi area, people that listen to you, if they have people in those areas, hopefully we'll be able to connect them with them. But again, you can reach out to us on Facebook, Americans for Prosperity Mississippi, and just keep up with us. Stone will be posting about his adventures going to Pennsylvania to knock doors. Our team will be going to Georgia to knock doors soon, and we'll be sharing kind of where we're going to be going over the next few years or the next few months.
Related to midterm elections?
Yeah, midterm elections.
Yeah.
So trying to regain the House and Senate so we can hopefully put a stop to the extreme spending. But once we get there, we've got to get people back energized on saying, oh, it's not safe yet.
Right. Yeah,
your money's
absolutely
not safe yet.
Your job is not done once you take back the House and the Senate. We don't have really time to get into it. Sure, I'm seeing a lot of headlines. They're saying this red wave may be petering out. I don't know if that's designed by the media just to try to increase political sales, ad sales. I suspect they're up to that. But I can't believe the state that this country's in right now, that there is not a lot of appetite for wholesale change.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're just going to keep on fighting. So, yeah, check us out, America's Prosperity Mississippi, on Facebook, and we'll go from there.
Okay. All right. Well, we've been talking to Cade Yates, Americans Prosperity, great organization to get in touch with. They've got an office right there in Ridgeland. We'll keep everybody updated on the things that are going on there as well. Thanks, Cade, for coming in.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
Everybody else, see you tomorrow.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.